coming up on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast.
The first thing I do just when I come in the room is I ask how the parents are doing.
We discuss well child visits during the first year of life with Dr. Natalie Burr of the Little Rock Pediatric Clinic. Then we talk to Anna Strong with the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics about policy to help improve infant health.
We've talked a lot about maternity deserts in our state. We have pediatric deserts too.
Ashley Bearden Campbell with Arkansans for Improving Maternal Health highlights the economic challenges facing new parents.
Families are making impossible decisions during one of the most vulnerable seasons of their life.
And Kara Osborne with Ingeborg Initiatives tells us about Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies, America.
For big change to happen, there has to be a single number to point to, and it has to be ambitious.
Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, a series where we explore the data and issues behind maternal and infant health in Arkansas. I'm your host, Sandra McGrew. I'm the executive director here at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, also known as ACHI. We are an independent health policy center focused on evidence-based research, analysis, and collaborative efforts to improve the health of all Arkansans. We pulled our analysts and researchers together to envision what a healthy birthing journey could look like and identify points along the way where our state has opportunities to make lasting improvements for our moms, children, families, and communities. We identified 9 phases along the birthing journey from pre-pregnancy through delivery and into the postpartum period. In this episode, we explore the 9th and final phase, well child visits. These are recommended preventive checkups starting at infancy to help parents track growth and development milestones, discuss concerns about a child's health and well-being, and ensure a child receives appropriate vaccines and other support to prevent illnesses. To learn more about the role of well child visits and other topics surrounding infant care, I'm joined by Dr. Natalie Burr. Dr. Burr is a pediatrician with the Little Rock Pediatric Clinic and serves on the board of directors for the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She's a graduate of the University of Arkansas, and she earned her medical degree from the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences and completed her pediatric residency at Arkansas Children's Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast, Dr. Burr. We're just going to dive right in. When we are looking at maternal and in particular, infant health, what are your goals during well child visits?
So the well child visits are really important, especially in that first year or two of life. So we actually see children several times during that time period, usually at 1, 2, 6, 9, and 12 months of life. And so there's a lot of things we're trying to accomplish in those visits. They're often shorter than we would like. A lot of the time we get about 15 minutes for those. But the first thing I do just when I come in the room is I ask how the parents are doing. How are they doing? How are they adjusting? How are siblings adjusting? I'm kind of looking at the bond between the caregiver and the child. What does the interaction look like? Are they comfortable with comforting the baby if they get upset? And then sometimes families come in and they've got a list of concerns that they're really eager to address, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, we'll go down those one at a time. Sometimes I'm really the one leading the visit. But there's a few things that we always discuss at all the visits. One of them is the baby's growth, right? So growth and nutrition. So parents may have questions about breastfeeding, formula, introduction of solids is a big one, concern about possible food allergies. So we always talk a lot about that. Developmental milestones. Everyone wants to know, when will my baby walk? Mm-hmm. When will my baby sit up? When will they say their first word? And we use developmental screeners. Actually, I use something in clinic called an Ages and Stages questionnaire that's really helpful and has some developmental milestones for each age. And so we go through that together. Another screener we usually do at those visits in the first few months of life is a maternal depression screener. And so that's really important for us to follow up again on how mom is doing, work on connecting her to any resources in the community that might be helpful if she is struggling or having some difficulty. Another big part of the visits is really discussing safety and anticipatory guidance. So safety Discussions differ based on the age of the child. So I'm not talking about the same things with a one-month-old and a one-year-old and a seven-year-old, but there are some topics that really across the board I always touch on. One of those, especially in younger babies, is safe sleep. So making sure babies are in a safe sleep position and a safe sleep environment. Another one is safe storage. That would be medications, maybe if they're cleaning chemicals, and definitely we always talk about safe storage of firearms. Depending on what supplies we have in clinic, we may have gun safes that we can give to families. We may have trigger locks we can give to families to address those needs. And then, of course, immunizations. So during the first couple of years of life, there are several routine immunizations that we recommend to keep children healthy. And so we talk with parents and actually provide vaccine information sheets. And we talk through what the immunizations are for, any potential side effects that they may be concerned about, and then ask additional questions.
You touched on the childhood immunizations. You know, we know that those have received a lot of attention in recent years. Typically now, the conversations with parents, how are those going?
So we always welcome families asking questions about their child's health, and that's including the immunizations that they're going to get. We come at it from a perspective of a parent is the expert on their individual child. They know best what their child needs to grow and needs to thrive. And so we really want to come together as a partner with parents. We have some of the medical knowledge, expertise, scientific knowledge base, and we can talk with them about how vaccines are preparing their children to react if they were to come into contact with one of these diseases. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that we describe it is like a metaphor for computer software, and I feel like that a lot of people can understand that. So we talk about vaccines as kind of like your computer. You download new software, and that helps your computer resist a virus if it's to encounter it. So we talk about vaccines as kind of being like software for the immune system. So the immune system learns from them, and then long after the vaccine has left the body, the child has some of that memory to be able to quickly react to the disease if they're to encounter it in real life.
Let's talk a little bit about access. So, you know, we know a challenge, and this is a conversation that we truly have had throughout this entire series with multiple stakeholders and providers. But that is about maternal infant health access to care in rural areas. I know that you primarily see patients here in Little Rock, but what has the rural nature of much of the state like meant for your colleagues caring for these communities?
Yeah, there's definitely been concern about access to care, especially in more rural areas of the state. As I'm sure you've seen, there's been several maternity wards closed down, labor and delivery units around the state. And we worry some about pediatrics sort of following that trend. I know of two clinics already that have closed this year, citing financial concerns. And so we do worry about kind of that pipeline of pediatricians being available. I have one colleague down in Southeast Arkansas that I know will see upwards of 40 kids a day during cold and flu season.
What's average?
Average, I would say for me, is going to be closer to 25 to 30 a day. I may see a little more than 30, but I have several partners in my clinic.
Right.
And that's going to be during a high volume time like cold and flu season. Also, families just having to travel really far. I mean, 30 minutes is bad, but traveling an hour and a half with a sick kid in the car.
My goodness.
Just to try and go see your child's doctor. So that's definitely something we've had concern with just in more rural parts of the state.
I know that we're focused on the child for this conversation, but you did talk earlier about how you were also looking at the family, too, coming in and siblings. I want to talk specifically about new moms. What are the things that you look at? You do the depression screening, but are there other things that you look at with new moms?
Definitely. Yes, we monitor for the mood concerns, but also we just chat with new moms about, are they returning to work soon? A big concern is affordable childcare for a lot of our families, and that's added stress. What kind of social support do they have? So within our clinic, we actually have a family needs screener, and it's really addressing a lot of those potential social concerns. And in our clinic, we also have a program called Healthy Steps. Mm-hmm. So Healthy Steps is a really great national program, but we've adopted it in Arkansas in the last several years and have nearly 20 sites throughout the state. And so my Healthy Step specialist comes alongside me to really discuss any of these concerns with parents, to connect them to resources in the community. With moms, you know, another thing that I always talk about is, have they followed up with their OB? I always ask it at the one-month visit and the two-month visit. A large number of my moms are on pregnancy Medicaid, and so they really have a small window of time where they still have health coverage to try to address any concerns that may come up in the postpartum period. That's another thing that we do a lot, is trying to connect moms to insurance options if their pregnancy Medicaid has run out and now we're facing maybe a mental health crisis or something else going on.
That transition is really important, that continuity of care. And yes, during the series, we have highlighted a lot of opportunities for intervention, innovation to improve health outcomes across the state. What opportunities do you think we as a state should explore to improve infant health during that first year of life?
So I know I mentioned Healthy Steps already, and I think we've already had some great policy changes that have enabled Medicaid to do some enhanced reimbursement for practices that do opt in to some of those transformative models like Healthy Steps. Mm-hmm. And I think a really important piece to keeping that program sustainable would be if we could have private payers do the same. When we talk about innovation or even just trying to make current programs sustainable, I think that would be helpful. I think another thing is that we know healthy babies need healthy moms. And so really looking towards, okay, how can we help moms remain healthy, especially in that first year or two after having a baby? So whether that looks like something like postpartum Medicaid expansion or really a more streamlined and effective way to get those moms connected to healthcare and health insurance, I think that that's going to be huge. One thing that I always like to talk about is early literacy. From the very beginning, I always tell parents, and they'll kind of look at me like, you want me to read my one-month-old a book? And I'll say, yeah, mm-hmm. I do, because it's so much more than even the literacy piece, right? Usually when you're reading a book to a child, they're sitting on your lap, you're connecting, you know, you're maybe talking about the book. One thing that I always do in the first few months of life is I encourage every family that I have to sign up for the Imagination Library. Mm-hmm. With that, children get a book in the mail starting at a few months old all the way up to 5 years old. Early literacy, I think, is just something that we as pediatricians can really play a big part in and try to encourage outside of our clinic. And then one more thing is screens. I think that's top of mind for a lot of families. And so I've referred a lot of families to the American Academy of Pediatrics Family Media Plan. They have a really great website, a whole, you know, media institute that they've started. But they did come out with new guidelines just this year. And it really focuses more on quality and content. There are still some rules about total screen time, right? So don't recommend any screen time before 18 months of age and no more than 1 hour a day between 2 and 5. Children are learning to manage emotions and feelings, and it is easy maybe to, you know, use the screen to calm them down, but long term, you know, it's not the best tool for that.
Yeah. Dr. Burr, thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate your time and, of course, all of the hard work that you're doing for our community. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Natalie Burr is a pediatrician with the Little Rock Pediatric Clinic. Healthy systems to support infant health in our state don't happen on their own. They need good policies, policies that facilitate access to care and support for all Arkansans. To learn more about those policy efforts and opportunities in the future, I'm joined by Anna Strong. She's the executive director of the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, where she leads policy and advocacy initiatives to engage members in statewide programs that promote child health and healthcare quality. She is also a member of the foundation's executive committee for Excel by 8, an organization working to improve health and education outcomes for Arkansas children from prenatal to age 8. Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast. I'm so glad to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
in this episode, we are discussing the very important role that well child visits play in improving infant health, and particularly during that first year of life. So from a policy and public health perspective, if you could talk about why the first year of life is so critical for a child, and then also kind of give us a sense of what the landscape looks like right now when it comes to infant health.
Absolutely. So we already know that there are so many challenges that come with becoming a parent. As a parent myself, I have definitely been through that. My kids are 5 and 9 now. And so I feel like I'm just sort of coming out of that fog of those first few years of when it's very physically and mentally demanding to figure out how to raise a human, right? Those first few years of life are a high-touch period of time where families need to feel on all the time sometimes. And this is a time where we also can provide a lot of help and support, and where the policy decisions we make in the state are very, very important to how we can provide those supports and services for families. We know that in Arkansas, about 23,000 of our 35,000 births a year are covered by Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And so those infants have Our Kids First or Medicaid for their health care coverage. That covers families up to about $52,000 a year for a family of three. But we know that one of the most important places those families go starts just a few days after birth, when those families go for their first visit to their pediatrician or their primary care provider. 93% of kids covered by Medicaid are visiting a pediatrician or a primary care provider in that first year of life. And we know about 75% are visiting a pediatrician in the second 2 years of life for toddlers. And so we know that that's a really important time, where pediatricians are one of the most common and accessible places that kids go for help and support.
Mm-hmm. Child well visits can be, you know, obviously beyond just like immediate health, right? Vaccinations, those types of things. What other opportunities for intervention and support, like, what did those look like during this time?
So the pediatrician visit is a really important place where everything from the way you sleep to, conversations about bowel movements to conversations about mom's mental health are happening. It is really about how a family is adapting and how healthy a family is. And I love that about pediatricians. I am not a pediatrician or a clinician myself, but in working with pediatricians, I love that they are always looking at the entire family and how that family is functioning and how that family is supporting the child. So a lot of the things that happen at pediatric visits now include screenings for the family. So we are screening for maternal depression at pediatric well child visits, because we know that mom's mental health or dad's mental health impact a child's development. Mm-hmm. And we know that we want our parents to be their best selves so that our children can be their best selves. We also know that there are really important screenings happening for child development. So looking for whether a child is walking, talking, engaging with other humans at the right time. We also look for signs of autism. Pediatricians are really doing a lot of work to catch things early, so that if there is a challenge for that child or family, that we can catch it early, we can start to address it, and then we can keep costs down and improve health in the long run.
Let's hit on some of the policy wins and advancements that you've seen in the state in recent years in terms of improving access and support for families during this time. Access, of course, continues to be a main thread and a challenge, and something that many, many organizations and stakeholders are having conversations around and looking for solutions.
You know, I'd always remind myself that most kids in Arkansas, most kids on Medicaid in Arkansas, visit their pediatrician. Kids get sick. Parents are very invested in making sure their kids are healthy. So most kids go visit their doctor at least once a year. And we love making sure that those doctor's visits are very well-rounded, and that we are providing all the wraparound supports and screenings and interventions that a family may need to thrive. One of my favorite policy wins that we have had in the past few years was during the 2023 legislative session. We worked with an organization called Excel by 8, a really wonderful group, to pass that requires Medicaid to reimburse pediatric practices or other primary care doctors with a bit of additional supportive funding if they implement an evidence-based model that improves outcomes for infants and toddlers. And the model that we've been implementing here in Arkansas is called Healthy Steps. Healthy Steps is a wonderful way that pediatric clinics can add an additional person called a Healthy Steps specialist to their primary care team to help engage in the screenings, some of those conversations about child development that may not fit into a traditional well care visit, as well as deeper interventions such as integrated behavioral health services or conversations to help support families facing trauma or other major challenges so that those families can have what they need to thrive. We have now 17 Healthy Steps clinics in the state of Arkansas, and we have served over 70,000 kids through Healthy Steps in our state, which is really wonderful mm-hmm. to see this generation of infants and toddlers who are being impacted. And those Healthy Steps clinics are all over the state, both in pediatric practices and in family medicine practices. And in those Healthy Steps clinics, several things are happening that I think are worth noting and that also have some policy decisions behind them. So maternal depression screenings are happening in those Healthy Steps clinics. We are making sure to ask at least once a year, but ideally several times in that first year, about mom's mental health and check in about that to do that screening. And we were able to get Medicaid and other private payers to cover those maternal depression screenings. We are able to conduct and bill for behavioral health screenings as well. So even starting early, those screenings to help check in on how a child's social development mm-hmm. is coming along are really important. Pediatricians and other providers can be reimbursed for developmental screenings and autism screenings that help make sure a child's development is on target so that they are walking, talking, engaging with their peers, and developing on track. Or if they're not, we can get them into supportive services. And then finally, I've been really excited to see the expansion of maternal health supports in the prenatal period here in Arkansas. One of my dreams is that we have some stronger connections between our maternal health and pediatric workforces so that we can have better collaboration there. But doulas and community health workers, I think, have a lot of potential to become part of the network of people helping families Sure. in the prenatal and early infancy period. And particularly, I think about community health workers as an additional person that could be added to a pediatric team to help address some of those community-based needs, because all of our Healthy Steps sites are also screening for social determinants of health. The screening and then the actions we take to follow up to help on whatever the identified needs are, whether that is a domestic violence need, a housing need, food insecurity, filling out a SNAP application. We know that doulas, community health workers, Healthy Steps specialists are all part of the teams that can help work on those with families.
You have been doing this work for a long time.
Don't remind me.
You have. This is a good thing. This is a good thing. I know that when it comes to health policy and public health work, there's not always an immediate, like, we know that this worked, you know, an easily measured impact. But looking ahead, like if you're looking at the next decade, I'd like to know what is giving you hope right now with what you're seeing? And then also, what would you like to see maybe that's not in the conversation currently in terms of results for kids who receive these interventions and supports today?
What's giving me hope? I have been really energized by all of the support. I mean, I think about the governor's Healthy Moms, Healthy mm-hmm. Babies initiatives and all of the additional pieces of legislation that came along to support that. All the rules and the hard work that's being done to implement those in ways that are reflective of this new workforce in our state. That gives me so much hope. Our Healthy Steps practices give me hope because I hear pediatricians say things like, I don't know how I practiced pediatrics before I had a Healthy Steps specialist in my clinic to help support all these needs that families had that maybe I didn't know about or mm-hmm. ask about before. Those things give me a lot of hope. I'm also really excited about the rural health transformation funds that are coming into the state of Arkansas, thinking about how we can use those to help support families with infants and toddlers and in the prenatal period as well. I'm very excited and hopeful about some conversations we're having with payers about restructuring primary care for children in a way that really builds the team of people that we know can optimize outcomes for kids instead of paying all the individual providers and hoping they come together as a team.
We've talked throughout this series about reimbursement rates, but for a layperson listening, why are the reimbursement rates so important in these conversations?
You know, something that is giving me some concern right now is thinking about the fact that two pediatric clinics have closed in Arkansas in the past few months. And reportedly, those have both been due to reimbursement issues and not being a profitable line of business. We've had one 8% raise for pediatricians in the last 16 years. And that, with the rising costs of labor, of nurses, of everything else, makes it really hard to balance a budget in a pediatric clinic. And so I am worried about the future of our pediatric workforce, particularly in places in our state where we have high Medicaid populations, particularly in parts of our state where we don't have an incredibly dense population, our rural communities. You know, we've talked a lot about maternity deserts in our state. We have pediatric deserts too. And so I think the more we can do to build the teams of people who can connect in local communities using things like telemedicine to our advantage to help bring pediatric experts into the spaces where people live and where they live, work, and play is a really important opportunity as well. I'd love to see us think about how we pay for pediatric care. I'd love to see us build a team that includes a dietitian, that includes a mental health provider, that includes our Healthy Step specialist, that includes a community health worker. That's a team that can really truly spend the time with a family that we need to make sure that we are optimizing health. We're really interested in thinking about from a policy lens how we can do that.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Anna Strong is the executive director of the Arkansas chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. She's a graduate of Hendricks College and holds a dual public service and public health master's degree from the Clinton School of Public Service and the UAMS College of Public Health. Infant health care and well child visits are not the only concerns many Arkansas families will encounter following the birth of a child. For many, there can be unexpected economic and social challenges that force them to make difficult choices during that first year of life. Challenges like finding child care, the cost of care, return to work policies, and more prompted the group Arkansans for Improving Maternal Health, or AIM, to release a report earlier this year titled Strengthening Arkansas, Maternal Health as Economic Infrastructure. To learn more, I am joined by AIM's Executive Director, Ashley Bearden Campbell. Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, Ms. Bearden. It is so good to see you. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I know we have a lot to talk about and I'm ready to dive in. But before we do, can you tell our listeners what is AIM? How did it come to be? What is your role? Tell us all the things.
Sure. So I am the executive director of Arkansans for Improving Maternal Health, also known as AIM. We are a statewide nonprofit focused on elevating the stories of moms, babies, and families across Arkansas and ensuring that they have access to information to make their prenatal, postpartum, and early parenthood journeys more successful.
How did you get inspired to start this?
So in 2022, I gave birth to my daughter, Aubrey, very early. She had a 70-day NICU stay. And throughout that journey, I started having mental health complications that was not brought to light by anyone other than her NICU nurse. And so after a lot of therapy and medical intervention, I started mentoring some other moms in the NICU and figured out that sharing my story was helpful, and empowering other moms to share their story was helpful. And so I did not want anyone else to have to go through what I went through, which was extremely isolating. I started to see that this wasn't just a one-off problem. This is something that, you know, like they say, like what is most personal is most universal. And so I was looking for ways to get involved in the advocacy side. And so when AIM initially launched, we were focused on highlighting Arkansas's maternal health crisis. And obviously, we've had a lot of progress in the past few years. And so now we're focusing on what does the family support look like after mom leaves the hospital, mm-hmm. and what those early parenting supports are and how to navigate those challenges and making sure that resources are accessible.
I feel like we could talk about so many things of the work that you are doing that would apply to a lot of the steps in our healthy birthing journey. But for this episode, we are going to explore that early stage of childhood with, well, child visits, parents really starting to learn how to parent, and for many, returning to the workforce. Talk about the report you guys released earlier this year that focuses on that last piece. Tell us how you looked at and why you felt it needed to be part of the conversation.
Sure. So, I mean, most importantly, I think that AIM's focus was on highlighting the fact that families are making impossible decisions during one of the most vulnerable seasons of their life in early parenting. We also thought that it was really important for our voice to not be the main voice in this conversation. There are so many incredible organizations like ACAI working across the state to release research and statistics that highlight so many different areas of early parenting, childcare access, workforce supports, and things like that. And so the genesis of this white paper was, of course, to have our own research highlighted, but to also paint a broader picture of what Arkansas looks like for families navigating this time period.
And a couple of things that stuck out to me in your report. 76% of Arkansans cited how childcare is expensive.
Right.
40% said childcare is hard to find. What were some other things in the report? Did anything surprise you?
Well, so let me start with what the lay of the land really looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, something that we focused on for a long time is, what does the birthing process look like for an Arkansas mom? We know that there are already affordability and access challenges when it comes to even being able to have a baby and have that prenatal support. We know that almost 50% of births are covered under Medicaid. And so it's already hard to afford and find a place to have a baby. It's also extremely hard to find and afford a place to take care of your child after you have a baby. So many moms, I think it's 1 in 5 nationally, are going back to work before it's medically recommended. And that's, nobody wants to do that, right? It's because they can't afford not to.
Sure.
And so we took a look at 600 Arkansas voters across the state through focus groups and through surveys to really get a clear picture of not only what they are experiencing, but what their attitudes are towards taking action on these issues so that we could show policymakers that there's momentum. And so I think the most surprising thing that we found was honestly the bipartisan support for taking action on these issues. You know, Arkansas is a really red state for the most part, but there's such a clear need here. It's over 90% of participants support policymaker or government intervention to improve access to childcare and paid family leave and early parenting supports. And there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, mm-hmm. but 90% across the board on both sides of the aisle is pretty huge.
And we know childcare, as you were talking about here, it's a challenge for, I mean, many parents trying to return also to the workforce, and that's the reason they have to. But how does that dynamic change when we look at families in rural versus more urban parts of the state?
So families in more rural parts of the state have the same issues, but just heightened, right? There's even less access. There's less options. They have longer travel times. You have a smaller workforce that you're pulling from already, which means there are, you know, more limited options for employees, but also employers. And so you have to make some really hard decisions there. If you're living in a rural part of the state, you may be traveling 30 minutes to drop your child off and then another 30 minutes just to get to your job. Mm-hmm. And that's if you only have one child.
Right.
And so we know that nearly 40% of Arkansas households are single parent households. Mm-hmm. And so if childcare is making up 30% of your annual income, that is significant. And that's just to take care of your child so that you can go to work. That's not including gas. That's not including housing. It's not including having to take off, you know, God forbid your child gets inevitably sick or right. You do. And so the cost is astronomical. It's not realistic. And it's not one person's fault, right, or entity's fault. It's just, it is a structural issue and why we think it's so important for maternal health to be viewed as an economic issue, and it has to be part of the conversation.
What are some of the things that we need to look at, whether from, you know, government policy perspective or private businesses, that could move the needle here?
What we found is, again, like, there is no one silver bullet. There's not one organization or entity that's going to solve this issue. Arkansas is really, it's really neat that we are made up of so many small businesses and that that's such a huge part of our workforce. But that also means that there have to be protections and provisions in place that support them, because they want to be able to take care of their employees. And I don't think there's any employer that's sitting around thinking, man, I need this mom to come back to work and 2 weeks after she gives birth. But they need to have access to the information, whether it's federal tax credits or something new that's coming along, in order to support them. But we did find some universal things that we suggested as pathways forward. We know that their number one would be a more centralized resource navigation system. Because sometimes the issue isn't having the resources, it's being able to navigate and access them, which is something that AIM has been so focused on for a long time. If you go to our website, aimforarkansas.org, we have a resource list that is not only free and not only easy to download and share, but it's easy to understand. So things like the Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Act, that's incredible. But if you don't know what any of that means to you, it's not really helpful, right, for the real families that we're talking about, for it to impact. So some of these disconnected systems for supports, Medicaid, WIC, SNAP, child care assistance, we want to make sure that we can improve enrollment, make that process easier for people to enroll and stay on. Presumptive eligibility was a huge part of Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies. But if you can't fill the paperwork out, it doesn't matter. So a unified benefits navigation is, I would say, like, the top priority for us there in terms of pathways forward. Also creating employer incentives and having flexibility. There are some businesses that are creating some really interesting models across the state, but a lot of those highlights so far have been from large-scale employers. So we're really trying to dive a little bit deeper and to see how these smaller businesses, again, that make up such a huge part of the workforce, can offset some of these costs so that they can truly afford to support their employees in the way that they want to. Of course, expanding child care supply, there are things at the federal level that folks can take advantage of, different types of tax credits and different interesting options. But again, there's already a workforce shortage here, so we have to make sure that we have people to work in these child care facilities and to build them out. But we've seen how important these supports are and how they're taking shape in the real world, like through Act 904, expanding maternity leave for teachers. Arkansas is a national example. Other states are following our lead. And so the more initiatives that we can take, showcase what we can do here on a smaller scale and take little pieces from other states of good ideas that can work for us, I think the better Arkansas is going to be to not only have babies, but to live and raise our children.
You know, over the past few years as a state, we've accomplished a lot, right? You know, I think that there's been a lot of energy there, and you have been at the table. I feel like every time there's any event or, you know, we always see you there, and it's such a delight. We know that, of course, there's more work to do because we can't do everything at once. But if you could see one maternal health initiative or program, if you could see one of those move forward in the next year, what would it be?
We have had so much momentum. There are so many great ideas across our state. But when I went on a statewide tour earlier in AIM's inception, because I really wanted to hear from every single region what their unique challenges were and also what their unique solutions were, some of the feedback we heard was, you know, these things sound great on paper, but it doesn't make sense for South Arkansas, for instance. And so what I would like to see is this time between now and the next legislative session be used for is bringing those people to the table, to Little Rock, to have these conversations together, similar to some of these working groups. We want to make sure that we're not just putting out policy recommendations that make zero sense for smack over Arkansas, but are great for Bentonville, Arkansas. Right.
Because regionally, you know, I mean, of course, there's going to be universal needs and things,
sure,
you know, across all the, but did anything stick out to you as it relates to this phase of the birthing journey that were different from each region of the state?
Absolutely. I mean, access to birthing hospitals, I think, would be number one. Mm-hmm. And not even just birthing hospitals, prenatal care. I mean, somebody that I went to high school with and was pretty close with, I had no idea that she was driving 45 minutes for every single prenatal appointment. That's extremely difficult. Mm-hmm. And she lives in a small town outside of Jonesboro. Again, I think sometimes those smaller communities are being left out of the conversation. We talk about them at a broad level, but we're not getting in there and really finding solutions that work for them, which is why it's so exciting to see telemedicine, telehealth mm-hmm. be expanded, community health workers, humongous, doulas, midwives. I mean, these types of things are not just words on a paper, like they're truly life-changing yeah. for these families. And they're options that a lot of these people don't even know exist.
Right. You're a mom, you have a 4-year-old, and you
That's
are
right.
expecting twins.
That's at, right.
During this recording. What gives you the most hope right now? As a mom in our state,
what gives me the most hope is knowing that these issues won't be an obstacle that my daughter has to tackle one day. Mm-hmm. I mean, truly, I wake up every day thinking about what her generation is going to look like. And I think that, you know, we are solving things in the now. You know, there's so many folks that are just starting to get involved or that have been involved in this work for a long time. And there's no slowing down.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for everything that AKI does.
Ashley Bearden Campbell is the executive director of AIM, Arkansans for Improving Maternal Health. You can find their report on their website, aimforarkansas.org. Throughout this series, we've learned about efforts taking place across our state, of course, to improve health outcomes for Arkansas moms and babies. We've also spoken to people doing that work, whether it's at the state capitol, hospitals, health clinics around the state, or integrated within our rural communities. Now, one group is working to amplify that work beyond our borders and help improve maternal and infant health outcomes across the nation. With the support of founder and CEO Olivia Walton, Ingeborg Initiatives recently launched Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies America. To learn more about the initiative, I'm joined by Kara Osborne. She's a nurse midwife and an advisor to Ingeborg Initiatives focused on improving maternal health. Thank you so much for joining us on the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, Ms. Osborne.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Throughout this series, we've been exploring active efforts and future opportunities to improve maternal and infant health outcomes in Arkansas. There's been obviously a lot of energy and there's been a lot of focus with this issue in our state, driven in no small part by the high maternal mortality rate. But this isn't a challenge that we're just seeing here in Arkansas. We know we're seeing this across the nation. So I thought we would start there. Can you talk about how Ingeborg Initiatives has launched a new campaign to address this challenge more broadly?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really been all generated from very personal and local experience. So getting to really ask questions about what the experience of moms here in Arkansas looks like led us into this place of saying, this is bad and it's getting worse, not better. How can we help and how can we change that? So because my background and training are in maternal health, I'm a nurse midwife, we really started talking together about where the deficits in the system are that are leading to these outcomes and really looking at what sort of systems level change needs to happen to make people's experience better. So really, the personal became the local, became a state initiative, became regional initiative under mm-hmm. Heartland Forward. So just around Mother's Day, we launched Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies America, really to bring three things to the issue: focus, funding, and political will. at the end of the day, maternal mortality in the U.S. is a systems failure. The system is not meeting women where they are and with what they need to have a healthy birth and postpartum and newborn period. And then Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies is really saying, if we know how to make change, which I think we've demonstrated over the past couple of years, some things that can work, and we've learned a lot from other states like New Jersey and California and Michigan who were further along, why isn't this happening in every state? Why aren't we seeing these changes implemented across all states and in all healthcare systems? And the truth of it really came down to like focus funding and political will. So Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies is really trying to drum up the three of those things and the large scale on a national level to say all moms in all places deserve to have a healthy birth and postpartum newborn period. Your geography shouldn't dictate what your experience looks like. So how do we as a country really make a concerted effort and a big push to get back in line with our peer developed countries?
What is the overarching goal?
Our North Star really is cutting maternal mortality in half. So the overarching goal is to shift the underlying system through changes in mostly policy, but policy, payment, direct service delivery to see the impact on, you know, our North Star indicator of mortality. The reason we use mortality is because it's the only thing we can really reliably measure. So for every case of mortality, there are more than 10 of severe maternal complications. Same thing on the infant side. It's really just the tip of the iceberg. So if we can move the tip of the iceberg, we will have shifted the whole base of the iceberg as well and really improved the system overall.
And we know that that shift, it won't be easy. But why did Ingeborg feel that that goal, that cutting maternal mortality rate in half, why was that goal so important?
For big change to happen, there has to be a single number to point to, and it has to be ambitious. So, you know, setting it at half, we think about 80%+ of maternal mortality is preventable, and that just is in sensing. You know, Olivia and I talk about all the time, like, if it's preventable, why aren't we preventing it? And the truth is we just don't have the system in place to prevent it. So how do we build and or change and shift the existing system to make a system that really does prevent what's preventable?
What do you think the biggest challenge is with that?
Inertia, just, you know, things are the way they have been for quite some time. The modern system has looked the way it looks for at least 30, maybe close to 50 years. And it's built really around complicated payment systems. Mm-hmm. So until and unless you can shift the system and shift the payment for that system to a better place, it's incredibly hard to move population level data.
What does it look like on the ground to help make those shifts with this complexity and the complex systems that we have in place in the U.S.?
So for us at Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies, it really looks like bringing attention and fuel to the fire of things that have already been started and are working. So the federal government started the TEMA program under CMMI, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. The TEMA program is specifically geared towards shifting payment mechanisms to make sure there's payment for things like doulas, midwives, community health workers, lactation consultants, all the members of the team that have historically not had good payment mechanisms in place. Certainly, there are great home visiting programs. We think postpartum home visiting is low-hanging fruit in terms of catching issues in the postpartum period when most people aren't really getting care. I think there's also a real argument for just data collection, just knowing what's happening. So at Heartland Forward, we recently signed an MOU with HHS around the Perinatal Improvement Collaborative, the PIC. That's currently running in about 200 hospitals. We only have 2,500 delivering facilities in the U.S. If we could get that system up and running in all 2,500, it's been shown to decrease maternal mortality by 41% in the current 200 hospitals. That in and of itself would get us close to our goal of cutting the rate in half.
You'd mentioned some of the other states that you were looking at who maybe have some policy advancements in place. Could you talk about what maybe some of those promising policy advancement look like and how those could be adopted here?
So luckily, Arkansas made a big push in the right direction last session with Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies Arkansas, which is the genesis of our name. Interestingly, Governor Whitmer's legislation in Michigan was also called Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies. It's really saying whatever the state context is, there's work that can be done. When we look at exemplar states like New Jersey, one of the biggest things has been this big push around postpartum home visiting. That's something that both the TEMA mechanism in Arkansas and Healthy Moms, Healthy Babies are supporting by having payment mechanism for community health workers. Not all home visits need to be done by nurses. Community health workers can be incredibly effective. I think the state is doing a great job focusing on the usefulness of local health units here in Arkansas. We have local health units in all 75 counties and really helping women understand that that's a great resource in the prenatal and postpartum period. We're starting to look at some pilots that would place midwives in the local health units to deliver a full scope prenatal care, not just the early first trimester visits. So I think there's a lot of promise already in what's happening here in Arkansas. The trick at this point is how do we actually get all those things implemented? How do we make that all the way through the rulemaking and rate setting process? So things like reimbursement for doulas are not just there in concept, but are actually available to the families.
The momentum that you're talking about, what is the sense of urgency within the work that you're doing right now?
I mean, people are dying. It's a tragedy and it is urgent. And I think that is what we have to just keep reminding people. I think, again, that just incredible inertia of falling into like the way it's always been and really helping people have hope that it can be better and different. And we have to just keep trying. I think we're all so busy in our just day-to-day lives and people are sort of in survival mode. It's hard to really think about the tiny steps that have to happen every day to make big change in the cumulative over time.
Well, let's fast forward, let's say like the next 5 years. What are other accomplishments that you're hoping happen?
Yeah, I think really increasing the workforce, having many more nurses, doulas, community health workers, family practice docs that are actually active in OB, really expanding that workforce is a huge part of the puzzle and something that is going to take focus, but I really believe we can make a tremendous difference in the next 5 years. The new nurse midwifery training program at UAMS is getting up and running. That's going to make a big difference. I think also just really leaning into the local health units and having those be places that people know are a good resource and that people feel comfortable accessing care. So if I'm looking 5 years out, I think it really just looks like more care in more places.
What gives you the most hope right now being just on the ground doing this work?
I think it's an incredible way to get past some of the deep divides that have happened in the political spectrum, but even just in the day-to-day of what side of what issue you're on, to say everybody cares about moms, everybody cares about babies. We've been ignoring moms and babies. This is sad. This needs to change. I've never talked to anybody about this issue who's like, oh, that doesn't really matter. Everyone knows it matters. Everybody believes that things can change. And the real source of hope for me is just how truly inspiring the people who choose to like really get involved are and how much people are willing to take on to just make things better.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today, Ms. Osborne.
Happy to do it.
Kara Osborne is an advisor to Ingeborg Initiatives. She holds a master's in nursing from Vanderbilt University and a doctorate in public health from the Harvard University School of Public Health. Thank you for joining us for the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The Healthy Birthing Journey podcast is produced by Joshua Cook at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. You can find all 9 episodes, our infographic outlining the 9 points on a healthy birthing journey, and more analyses of maternal and infant health data in Arkansas on our website, achi.net. Thank you for listening.